Hello, hello, hello. It's Connor. Thank you so much for joining us for another brand new episode of Drama with Connor and Dylan. The episode that you're about to hear is going to gag you. You're absolutely going to love Burke Swanson, who is currently starring in Stranger Things, The First Shadow. Cannot wait for you to hear this episode. We love him so much. But before we get into the chat, I want to tell you about our Patreon. Patreon.com/thedramapodcast is where you'll find Drama Plus. That's our bonus content platform where for $5 a month, you get access to bonus episodes and you get added to our close friends on Instagram. It's so fun. And you support your favorite twins on your favorite podcast. So truly, what more could you ever want? Just head over to patreon.com/thedramapodcast to join Drama Plus. All right, now enjoy this episode with Burke. See you in a second. Bye.
Press play.
Curtain up and now we're in.
It's time to take spin.
The shade and tea
to spill.
Ooh, drama.
Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book? Who got nominated?
They opt to know.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today?
Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more.
Drama.
Drama. Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell.
Dylan, how are you?
I'm so good. I'm honestly having just so much fun chatting with our guest already that I want to just jump right in.
I know. I wish we were recording everything that they just said to us because I'm on cloud nine. I'm on cloud nine.
I know.
Also, he entered the Zoom and I was like, is this James Dean? The ghost of James Dean on the call. Who, I forget what publication it was, but they ranked James Dean as the sexiest man of all time.
Wait, I saw that list. They had Paul Mescal on the list too. You'll be pleased to hear.
Yeah. He was like number five or six.
Yeah. And Zayn Malik came in there with like a random.
Wow. I love that.
Entry point. One of my sexiest men alive. I want to talk about him for a second.
Oh, okay.
Ryan Phillippe. There's this new reboot of I Know What You Did Last Summer. But of course I had to rewatch the original the other night. And wow, these people looked so good on screen. Ryan Phillippe, Freddie Prinze Jr., Jennifer Love Hewitt, Sarah Michelle.
SMG baby.
The best. And it was so good. It's such a nostalgia trip. I just feel like what's old is new again in so many ways right now. Like obviously reboot culture has been huge. Even like what we're going to talk about today with our guests. Like there's like nostalgia that's just in a lot of the media that's out there right now. I highly recommend this movie too. If as far as reboots go, I do think it's a canonical sequel, I would
say. Okay, interesting. So it takes place in the same timeline.
Same universe fully. Yep, it is so good and fun and stupid and campy, but kind of gaggy.
So, of course, Ryan, SMG, JLH, and Freddie Prinze are all like in that category of best they've ever looked on screen for the original.
Totally.
So this new one takes place in present day?
It's very much present day. And I have to say, I got some heat on this very podcast a couple of months ago.
Okay.
We're talking about contemporary plays and musicals sometimes sounding cheesy when they try and integrate like current lingo, like the words that we use right now or the words you might see. And I will say this movie does that, but I was thinking long and hard about it. And I think it's okay because in 30 years, when they make another reboot of this series, we'll look back and be like, oh yeah, that is how people spoke in 2025.
Do they say like clock your tea or gaggy and stuff?
Of that ilk. Like the Madeline Klein character calls other people diva, you know, and it's like fun stuff like that.
People do talk like that.
Yeah. So it's a time capsule. That's what I love about it.
Oh my God.
And maybe one day someone will listen back to this podcast and think we talked insane, but it was just the way that it was in 2025.
I know. Well, I'm definitely going to go see it this weekend. But good. Dylan, I'm so excited about today's guest. We've been planning to have him on for months, but we're waiting until you finally saw his show. And yes, we have so much to get into. So would you please introduce him so we can get chatting?
Our guest today is an actor and artist currently starring on Broadway in Stranger Things. The First Shadow is James Hopper Jr. Before he was on The Case in Hawkins, Indiana, this rising star appeared on Broadway in Roundabout Theater Company's retelling of Tennessee Williams' The Rose Tattoo, opposite Marissa Tomei. He also spent a year on the road delighting audiences as George McFly in Back to the Future, the musical. This Savannah College of Art and Design graduate has also recurred in the television series Harlem on Amazon and appeared on screen in Hit the Road, Jax by Alan Childress. With the Savannah Classical Touring Company, our guest also appeared in Hamlet and Julius Caesar. When off stage, he is creating experimental art as part of JMP Collective. This Broadway star is an advocate, occasional mountain man, and a true creative. Please welcome to Drama,
Burke Swanson.
What an incredible introduction. My goodness. I mean, there's things in there in which I've forgotten about. So thank you for that. Cheers to that.
We do a deep dive, Burke. We really do.
Absolutely. My goodness. Shout out to JMP Collective and Savannah Classical Touring Company. My goodness.
Hell yeah.
Wait, so I have to say, you are giving James Dean in Rebel Without a Cause, but I was hoping you'd be wearing your glasses for the call.
Ah, yes, yes, yes. I mean, I'm sure they're somewhere here. We can do a little shout out for your promo at the end. But yeah, the contacts did not come out last night.
Oh, wait, so they're real glasses? They're not just for fashion?
No, no fashion here. Just real glasses. Though I will say that I got to give a shout out to my old dressing roommate, Kartrez Tucker, who played Goldie Wilson on Back to the Future First National Tour. He was tired of my old broken glasses. I had some Warby Parkers in which when I graduated from SCAD, I went back to my hometown for a wedding and was in my old neighborhood, very Stranger Things-esque, very Hawkins. I wanted to have a bike. I was kind of borrowing a neighbor's bike, just trying to be able to cruise around and wanted it back at the house that I was staying at. And I was just being a very silly guy. Wasn't wearing a helmet. I was wearing flip-flops and going downhill very, very fast. And I got into a bike accident. And it went flipping over, crashed, and my glasses kind of broke on the edge. And the very frugal person that I am, I was like, oh, this will be really humbling. I'll just glue these together and I won't buy new glasses. So I've had epoxied glasses with like a big old booger of glue, you know, on the side for many, many years. And whenever I would pull them out, Kartrez was just like, Burke, this is absolutely ridiculous. You must. So my Happy Trails gift was a gift card to Warby Parker. So once I made it back to the city, I got these new, you know, sort of turquoise teal, which is one of my favorite colors, glasses. So thank you, Kartrez.
They're cool. That's vintage as hell to be in a bike accident.
It is vintage as hell. And, you know, to do it in flip-flops is really telling. I mean, I don't know that I've worn flip-flops since moving to New York City, maybe except for like, you know, when I get out of the shower and I'm walking around in my apartment. But it was a very wild sort of circuit of events. I got into that bike accident. And then the next day I got the audition for Rose Tattoo.
Oh.
And so like with a minor concussion, and honestly, only minor concussion because I had just graduated and I had been doing like stage combat. So when I flipped over the bike, I did like a front tuck and roll very expertly. Thank you so much. I passed with flying colors, you know, certified, certified. Yeah, no, I did that audition slightly concussed. And I'm pretty sure that's the only reason why Jim Carnahan was like, yeah, this is the guy on a self-tape of all things. He was like, his eyes are a little glazed. What's going on?
Well, Leah Michele had a similar experience famously on her way to her Glee audition. She was in a car accident and was like allegedly like pulling glass out of her hair or whatever in the bathroom.
Very dramatic. Yeah, very dramatic.
Very Leah Michele. But maybe there's something to it, to like kind of being in a state of distraction, delirium, et cetera, and then just going for it in an audition.
100%. I mean, I feel like since that whole circuit of events, the best auditions that I've had, not only in terms of feeling like walking out of the room being like, that is the moment that I like, I've left everything I could in the room, but also just, you know, like actually getting jobs.
Yeah.
So much of it is really just out of our hands as actors. There's such a reason, I think, why people become directors and producers on top of performing, because it is a moment where you can really take control of what you are giving in terms of your effort, grit, and perseverance. But when you are just an actor, there's just so many things. I mean, the stories of flipping a coin or, oh, that looks like my ex-partner. We're not going to go to that person. You know, there's so many things that are out of your hand that really all I'm personally hoping for is to just go in and do it. And when you're thinking about the fact that you're having a hard time thinking, there's something to be said about like, you know, just saying the lines and letting it be free and letting what you have come for free. And I was at a perfect age and time, you know, on this like moment of transition. And it was a perfect lead up for Jack, that character in the Tennessee Williams show. And yeah, full of excitement and almost, I don't know if it's naive passion. I think it's just passion. Maybe all passion is naive to some people, but you know, I was just so looking forward to continuing to live out the dream and figure out what that was like. And that's a really just beautiful, it was a beautiful setup for that show, which is one of only maybe the only happy ending, or maybe the only happy Tennessee Williams play that we have.
I was going to say, I don't know it. I've never seen it, read it, anything.
Yeah, it's one of his problem plays for sure. I mean, it's like, I think a three-act structure. It doesn't fit well within a modern time. You know, it's really sort of a King Lear Hamlet moment for the lead. So Marissa was essentially on stage the entire time, and all of these characters sort of come and push her along through this very tumultuous 48 hours of her life, but in it is so much passion and love. And, you know, there's a lot of passion, obviously, in Tennessee Williams' work.
Oh, yeah.
But that love and that really like sincere female power that I think people try to create nowadays, and but was done so innately in that moment, I think is really beautifully expressed. So yeah, anybody who was able to see it, hopefully you got that as well.
Oh gosh, I'm sad I missed it. I remember when it was happening and I remember being excited about Marissa Tomei. Sliding doors moment here that we could have seen you on stage much sooner than Stranger Things.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Next time, babe.
Broadway debut too, right? Right after school.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was my first audition after school. And yeah, I mean, it was just like, just so many things, right? Like I left school truly, truly taking the advice of one of our teachers where it says, they said, you know, it takes 20 years to make a good actor. That's not a working actor. That's just a good actor. Mm. Someone who is able to not only understand their craft, but to live in it and express it without tension and without all the other residual habits and everything else. And I really mentally went in and prepared myself to take 20 years to really even work, let alone make my Broadway debut. And so to even just like have that opportunity right after school, right before the pandemic,
right,
and everything that followed there, you know, I'm just so grateful not only to Jim and Trip and may rest in peace, you know, Todd Haynes, but, you know, for them giving me the green light to go do it, but also that company. I mean, like Stranger Things, it was such a huge cast of people for a play, and many of them titans of this industry doing very, very small moments of this work. Marissa was really the only one who was on stage, and me and Ella Rubin, who played my, you know, was my scene partner, her daughter, were the only people who sort of came back within the show.
Oh.
And I mean, we're talking people like Portia, Paige Gilbert. We're talking, you know, Cassie Beck. We're, you know, like Tina Benko.
Ellen Marsh, right?
Ellen Marsh. I mean, like Jennifer Sanchez, who was just in Real Women Have Curves, you know, like just these unbelievable people. Andrea Burns, who, you know, Notebook, you know, like all just these people who were such an educational moment for a young artist to see not only different ways of doing this art form, but also different ways of persisting within this art form as a career. And it sort of allowed me to have the beginner steps of seeing what a life in this career, as well as how do you continue to make it an art form. I spent a lot of time with Greg Hildreth, who, you know, I still to this day will call, you know, the mayor of Midtown, just this guy who is, you know, has this real clown sense of humor and is really sincere in his expression of commitment to this art form. And, you know, him sort of taking me around the city and being so gracious with his time and energy is something that I'll never forget. I mean, and I had my first martini with him. I went to Glasshouse for the first time with him.
Uh-oh.
I found out what it is to be a stock owner of Glasshouse, you know, that year. And yeah, no, it was just like a really, really beautiful, beautiful time. And I'm just so grateful to have had that before we had like a really big transition within the world.
Yeah.
To have to sort of reorient.
An era shift probably, right? Because that was...
I would say there's definitely a pre and post COVID.
Yeah.
I would argue,
you
know, we're still dealing with the after effects of that, you know, in this industry, but in the world. And I think that it'll be really interesting to see in the next, let's say, decade. You know, I'm really intrigued to see the work that continues to come out from folks as we continue to process something that I don't think we fully really have understood in terms of the immense amount of consequences that it's had on us personally, culturally, spiritually, all sorts of different avenues to explore that.
Absolutely. It's so weird because we started our podcast November 2019 and we were recording in person for 5 months and then switched to Zoom. And anyway, it's gone on. We actually have never gone back to in person. Hopefully one day. It's hard because we live in different cities, but every week we got on this podcast and talked with our guests about COVID, especially during like 2020 through 2021. So it would be so crazy to go back from the beginning and just hear how we were in real time processing verbally on the air, the pandemic and how it was affecting art. And I feel like during that time, a lot of our guests more so wanted to talk about like how they were taking care of themselves or taking their minds off things.
Yeah.
Which was really interesting.
What a time capsule that is. I mean, like, really.
Yeah. Horrifying in a way, but fun.
I mean, yeah, the trauma is layered and it is deep rooted and we have to laugh about it, right? Like we had to talk about how we were taking care of ourselves because if we weren't, you know, we needed, what else would there be? You know, we needed that hope. We needed that reminder that we will be okay. Because look at, you know, we're on this call and we may not physically be together, but energetically we are celebrating this thing that has given us so much life. And that has to mean something, right?
Yeah, it definitely does. There's still a strong connection. And I mean, I feel excited just being here on the Zoom with you.
Yeah, I mean, I'll jump the gun maybe a little bit, but I was saying this beforehand, and I want to make sure it's on record that Burke Swanson has this opinion. But, you know, I'm a relatively new fan of your podcast. And once I found out that this was a possibility a couple months back, I've been listening to some of the episodes from this year and just really commending to the both of you, you know, not only during the pandemic, but also now, consistently being really wonderful, sincere, authentic promoters of this industry and also the artists who are making it happen. And I hope that you two recognize that you are also a part of making that happen. I mean, you have so many people who are, whether it's something they're promoting or whether it's just themselves or whether it's just capturing them in a moment of artistic expression, like it is a life that I believe many of us are attempting to make, you know, within the arts. And your continued celebration of that is, I will speak for myself, that it is something I've been very much looking forward to being a part of. You have such a great community of people from the Drama Pod, and to even be a small moment of people's listening pleasure, hopefully it evokes that spirit within themselves too. So cheers to you.
Burke, oh my gosh, you're gonna make me cry. That's so sweet. We really put so much love into every single week, like the amount of research and then like just the way we then promoted and stuff. So you as a guest leave an indelible mark on Connor and I's hearts too. So that's very, very sweet to hear. And I'm glad that you feel that even just listening prior to coming on. So thank you.
100%.
I know, that's so sweet.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a really, we don't need to talk about COVID this whole time, but I think that what we can actually transition into is a more active thing, which is the community aspect of it.
Yeah.
You know, I think that when I moved to the city, I was very lucky, just pure luck that I was able to sort of like immediately streamline into quote unquote the Broadway community, this big shiny thing, and had a very specific isolated viewpoint of what that myopia looks like. But when the pandemic happened and when I went through, like, I mean, it was 5-year gap between doing that and Back to the Future, right? That's me doing day jobs. I was substitute teaching. I was bar backing, you know, like I was having to sustain life here in the city somehow. And through that time, I really didn't think that in many ways I was allowed to be a part of the community because I was not in a show.
Mm.
And what's been honestly one of the biggest impacts for me outside of everything that is Stranger Things, the first Shadow, and this origin story, is that it almost in some ways feels like another Broadway debut because it is looking at it 5 years later, 6 years later, I guess at this point, of saying, how is this community actually existing? So many members that you have on this podcast are really showcasing that the community is not just in what you are doing. It is how you do it. It is how we support each other. It's how we celebrate. You know, we had the Entertainment Community Fund come to our show last week or 2 weeks ago. And it was this really, really beautiful moment of just, there's so many ways to be a part of this. There's so many ways to be a part of this. And that expression is the most important part, whether you're on Broadway, off Broadway, regional, anywhere, right? We are all trying to explore. We are all trying to express. And that community is forever.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with where you're at or if you're in the city or if you're not in the city. You know, traveling around with Back to the Future was one of the most humbling experiences in my life because you were meeting people where they were at. You're meeting people in their backyard who finally got a chance to see something where they went, I could do that. Or this brings me joy. Or, you know, this is something that allows me to get out of my bubble and see that there might be more. People who never came to a show before, grown men, you know, who have never once listened to a musical, suddenly coming to Back to the Future, the musical, because their kid finally dragged them and they can't stop singing the words afterwards. They're standing at the stage. They're like, well, can I have a signature? You know, like they don't even know what's going on. But what makes those grown individuals who are not traditionally a part of our community stand up and say, hit him, George, you know, at the end of the climactic moment of that IP is not because of nostalgia. It is because they have experienced something very real and true in that moment from a collective of an ensemble, truly trying to tell a story with an audience. And when those two things come together, no matter where you are in the world, really, really magical things can happen. And even if that's in some, you know, attic space or a basement, you know, beneath some restaurant, you know, like it is very, very, to me, very, very important. And, you know, I think that this podcast is a real advocate for that. And so it's very important to me that you all continue to succeed. So anybody who has a chance to be on this podcast explicitly, fucking get on it. You know what I'm saying? Because this is where it's happening. You know, Connor and Dylan are making the dreams come true. So cheers to you all.
Oh my God.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate everything you're saying because we do feel strongly about the community being everyone and anyone. You know, it's the people who go to the shows, in them, work at them, are around the country, just waiting all year to see Back to the Future come to their hometown. You know, like, national tours changed our lives as kids, but community theater changed our lives too. And now we hope that this podcast does what you're talking about, which is get into people's ears wherever they might be, so they can still feel that love and excitement, not only for the arts, but for the people who make it, and see like the person behind it and get to know them more than just like, what's your craziest audition story? Or, you know, well, and then sure, we do like to hear what the moment where it started, which we'll get to in a sec, but we more so want to know, like, what are you doing between shows? Were you sad when you didn't get nominated for that Tony Award that everyone said you were going to get nominated for? Or, you know what I mean? Like, we really try to create a space where we can talk to people and meet them at their level and get real conversations going. So thank you for saying all of that.
Yeah, seriously. Wade Burke, we haven't asked you the pivotal question we ask every single guest right at the beginning of the episode. Are you well?
Am I well? I'm so well. I say with just such joy, with such joy. I actually have my mother in the other room right now, who's been so gracious to give me some quiet time to hang out with you all. It's really difficult for me to look around at my life right now and not answer that with a big heart. You know, there's a lot going on in our world right now. There's a lot going on right now. And, you know, in the face of that, there's a real easy response to say, you know what? It's not worth it. It's hopeless. It's why am I doing what I'm doing and all those things. And I will tell you that every day getting to go and perform Stranger Things, which is not a lighthearted show by any means, it is very traumatic in its own right. It's a tough story, but what happens is people coming together to witness that collectively and see that we can get up and try again. And that there are people even within those traumatic stories who are trying. And even the people who are experiencing that trauma, who may be making a choice right now, maybe they get to make another choice later. Everybody has that second chance. Everybody should have an opportunity to do good. And it's really hard for me to not look at this moment and just be really grateful to be exactly where I am right now. So yeah, I think I am well. And I'm sleeping more consistently in this last week. So that certainly helps.
Good.
Meditation and stretching and working out do wonders.
Oh my God. I was going to say, what pill are you taking? But yeah.
I wish, you know, like I've only recently sort of gotten into consistent caffeine, but I still have very strict rules about it. I like only drink it after one. I have more of an addictive personality than I'd like to admit, but
that's fair.
You know, lots of water.
I'm so happy for you just in general. I mean, congrats on Stranger Things. It is literally the most epic thing I think I've ever seen. We'll get into it a little bit more as we continue to chat, but thanks for taking time out of mom's weekend right now for chatting with us. I know how important that is. Where are you from originally?
We're all kind of all over. I mean, I was born in Colorado, a lot of family in the Midwest, specifically Missouri.
Oh.
You know, I grew up in Virginia. I went to school down in Georgia, there in Arizona. You know, it's sort of like all over the place. So she's coming from Colorado, and she's coming for the 100th performance, which we have tomorrow matinee. Tomorrow matinee is our 100th performance. So,
oh my God, I can't wait to see the pics of you guys celebrating with a cake backstage.
Many a little Demogorgon cupcake, you know, fondant for days.
That's so exciting. Wow, 100 performances already.
Yeah, no, it's kind of surreal. And I think it's a really beautiful moment. We have 34 people in the cast, right? Everybody's on stage. So your swings, your covers, your understudies, everybody's on stage doing it every single day. You know, 20 of those people are making their Broadway debuts. And so there's this really beautiful moment of like, this show is just so unique in so many ways. We know we're going to be doing this for a minute and everybody's like really supporting each other in that moment. But getting to 100 show mark is a really, really special thing. And I'm excited for all of us to sort of experience that together. And for me personally, it's been a big sort of goal to hit all 100 shows just being in it. And I'm very happy to say that I will have, knock on wood, right? You know, like that I will have completed that sort of goal for myself.
No bike accidents tonight.
No bike accidents, no riding bikes, only helmets, yeah, please. That. We're wearing closed-toed shoes.
You're the Aaron Tveit of your show. He famously never misses, ever.
Yeah, I mean, I think the very important part of that are you well question is A, how are you two? Are you well? So we'll answer that in a second. And then the second part of that question is the fact that like, it is a collective storytelling that we do. And for me personally, I have not called out or I have not had to miss a show because I have been able to do my show. As difficult or as trying as the show may be at times, you know, like I have been abled and I'm so grateful to do that. And there's many times in my life where I haven't been able to perform, you know? And so I try to honor that moment as it is. And the people who miss, there's like, it's no tease, no shade. Like, you got to do what you got to do, babe.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But for me, like, I want my understudies to feel good about when they go on. I want them to feel confident and not suddenly surprised by it. So if it's within my power, I would very much like them to know, hey, this is when I'm taking vacation and this is when you should be ready. You know, tell your family, come in and see it, you know?
Yeah,
100%.
That's the ideal way that it goes, right?
Yes. The kid who plays Henry, Louis?
Louis.
Louis, excuse me, the British version. The British version of
course,
Louis.
Of course, dear.
How does he do it like one day a week? Because holy shit, the hell that he goes through on stage, I was like feeling sad for the actor while watching the show. I was like, this guy is amazing.
I'm so glad you brought that up, Connor, because Louis is truly, you know, not only within the show structure, but just with behind the scenes as well. Like, he is our leader, you know, he's our Odysseus, you know, he's on this massive quest to get through this show 8 times a week. And, you know, this is his second year doing it. He did it on the West End. And, you know, if there was anybody who's confused as to why his name was alongside the names of those other male presenting actors for the Tony, I would urge you really to come check out the show, because the snot, tears and panic attack that you watch for 2.5 hours is all him. The only thing that's fake is the blood.
Thank God.
Thank God. And I'm telling you, when he is questioning whether to be taken over by a mind flare, he walks off stage and is joking around with as much grace and sincere humanity as anybody else who is not doing that 8 times a week. And so I really, really commend him for his consistent effort and commitment to this. And he has no, you know, there's no contractual outs. He's in that 8 shows a week. And, you know, he shows up.
Okay, I need to talk to the producers about that. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I hope he's being compensated for his time and his effort. But, you know, him showing up every single day, there's always that moment when you're backstage, you're nearing that second act where it's like really just like one thing after another. And it is a moment of like, well, Louis's out there doing it right now.
Yeah.
The least I can do is show up and show out. So he's really been a beautiful leader in this space just from showing up.
I love hearing that. I also have to say, Burke, you are so fantastic in this show. And I was telling, I've been telling people for months, of course, oh, we're having young Hopper on, right? Young Hopper on, you know, young David Harbour. And they're like, well, first of all, they're like, oh my God, he's so cute. Second of all, they're like, he's amazing. And you are so tall on that stage. First of all, you look like a giant next to like Allison playing.
Especially Allison.
Yeah, I know. But I also
famously fun size.
Yeah. 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 But you get to have so many amazing moments on stage. Are there any that, well, I know my favorite Hopper moment that I'll share in a second, but what's your favorite moment to do every performance?
Oh, wow. I mean, I think my part of the show is very Scooby-Doo, you know, within the sort of what I call the Chernobyl of it all. It's a very Scooby-Doo moment. We have the trio. Juan Carlos is Bob. We've been having our friend Patrick Scott McDermott in as Bob for the last couple weeks as well.
I saw him.
And just like really beautiful spirits from the two of them in their own ways, but also Allison Jay, who completes that trio. And any of the scenes that I really get with the trio, it's just such a blast to be in. We're always sort of, we're trying to take the audience forward and giving them that reprieve, particularly in the first act, to like keep going on this very hard journey that Louis is sort of taking us on. But I think my number one scene, it would probably be the top of Act 2 and the end of Act 2 with Allison. Those two moments are really the moments where we get to see the sincerity of these two characters that we've known for 10 years on the TV show in a way that I don't necessarily think we've had a chance to yet, question mark, you know, in the TV show, maybe, who's to say? But Allison Jay is just one of the greatest performers I've ever had the pleasure of being with. Her unquestioning willingness to dive into the material constantly, every single day, being willing to ride the wave and figure it out together has been such a godsend to me. A show freezes and you want to honor what the directors and the creatives have done. It is a collaborative art form, but the text has to continue living on for hundreds of shows after that at times. And to do that, it means that innately things will develop and change. And we get to do that together. And it's so, so lovely to do that with her. So the Mexico scene that we call, and then the diner scene or the Christmas scene sort of in our flash forward is the two, like when I walk off at the end of the show, we have this really beautiful checkout moment where we kind of give each other a very long hug backstage. And it's not a fun place for our characters to end or us to end, but knowing that she has my back and is with me the entire time is something that I continue to look forward to jumping in with, because it's very rare within a big IP that you really get true sentimental moments that it gets to be sincerely played out and explored. And to have that chance with her is a real honor.
You're such a generous co-star, Burke. That diner scene at the end of Act Two, no spoilers to those of you who haven't seen it yet, but I guess to say, because this is before the series, you know where the characters end up in a way, but that really moved me. The two of you together, and also just reckoning with the reality of what was going on within this supernatural world, like something very real, not only between their relationship, but where Hopper is going, you know, going off to war and kind of missing out on this chance together. And it really made me in that moment remember, like, oh my God, like we do know where these characters end up, but it broke me. You two really, you ate that.
I think that's the beautiful, we were having a talk back last night with a bunch of teachers who came over from Open Jar, and we talked about it a lot then as well, where it was just like the beautiful thing about Kay Treefry, our writer, who's been a writer on the show since season two and was writing season five at the same time as this, you know, from an outside perspective and a fan perspective, right? What that tells you is it's like, these things are very like irrevocably linked from one another, right? Like there is so much lore that is being dropped that people don't even really realize in this show that gives context to it, but even beyond season five. Ooh. And then also Easter eggs of like the thing that you've enjoyed and the nostalgia element of it. But what Kate has been incessant about is about exploring these characters very authentically. And Hawkins and Stranger Things is a community of misfits, right? It's a community of varying levels of socioeconomic status. It's varying levels of just social status, you know, within this community. And yet all of these individuals learning to come together and learning to find community. And that is not lost here. You have a lot of special effects. We won a special Tony for a reason, you know, and it comes out. Our sound, our lighting design, you know, costumes is nominated, Louis is nominated. These are all really beautiful, impactful things. But at the end of the day, it is about kids trying to find their way. And it's about kids trying to figure themselves out in that and learn, can I even allow myself the opportunity to accept community into my heart? And with the fact that this is 30 years prior to the story that we see in season one, we're getting to plant the seeds that David and Winona and Sean Astin, you know, all these people get to explore and play out later on. It's a really beautiful, unique, I don't think ever been done thing on a Broadway stage where we are actively telling the story right now, something that is not complete, even in the midst of season five trailer just dropping.
Yes. Which did you watch?
Dude, they had us come in. They had us come in after a show and they projected it up on the screen. We're the first people to see it.
No way.
Wow. And it's that moment where, you know, we've been so lucky to have Netflix, which is this massive IP. Also, check it for the fans.
I know I was going to say.
This is a shirt from my aunt Heidi. And they came ripped elbows because I think my arms are so big. You know, my arms are so big that I just ripped through them real quick. But I love this shirt. Yeah, I love this shirt. No elbows for days.
How long is the shirt? Does it hit it like the hips or what?
It does. It's a perfect length. If it was any shorter, it would not fit me. I certainly can't button it. But it's like not even fully sewn in. Like the pockets are like pretty loose.
Yeah.
But I love the Stranger Thing red, and I thought it was apt for today.
Yes. Yeah. It's perfect. You're talking about Netflix.
Yeah. We're Netflix is a massive IP. They could have been very Disney, right? And they could have come in and said, you have to be like Winona. You have to be like David. And none of that ever happened. Kate was very adamant about exploring these characters in a way that was sincere to us. You know, the West End version exists. Our show is very different than the West End. The script is completely changed.
Really?
And what that means is it's because it's different people exploring these characters. And there was a different expression that came from that. The same story is happening, the same beats are happening. But the way that it developed by the third week of our 6-week rehearsal, which is very unique in its own right, they said, why are we trying to write them to be somebody else that they aren't? Let's write for these people that we found who are the essence of these characters, and let's tell this story with them. And so literally days where we had 3, 4, 5 new versions of a same scene, you know, trying to go over and over and over. So when you have all of that work and you forget that you're a part of Netflix and forget that you're a part of this 10-year thing because you've been told, hey, bring yourself to it. And then suddenly you see David Harbour up there on that screen. You see Winona Ryder, you know, going through it. You know, you see all these folks who have given their life to it. It's truly, we looked around at each other and we're like, oh yeah, we're a part of that. And then, oh, by the way, you know, we play it after the show for the week that it comes out, right? So fans get to come see that experience as well. And hearing the reactions, it is just invigorates the hell out of us because it is that moment where you realize what you're really a part of and the consequences of a scene like Christmas, where you really are saying, hey, these characters do matter and the story is still important and you still feel something from it. You know, continue to follow this journey with us.
Wow.
That is so incredible, because that's the truth of it, is that, yes, there's spectacle in both the series and the play, but you don't stick around just for the spectacle. You know, you stick around because you might connect with somebody or something that's happening. And there's a reason why it's been a cultural phenomenon. And I think you guys are here to stay on Broadway, because it's really, really, if you're going to spend money on something, I think that Stranger Things is something that people should be coming to see and experience. I mean, the buzzing in the room before the performance started was, I mean, unbelievable.
I'm so happy to hear you say that, Dylan, because, you know, I do think that the show is, it's not a play. It's not a musical. It, you know, it was Best Entertainment Olivier, right?
Right.
Over in the West End. They didn't really know where to put it, right? They didn't really know where to put it, because it is, I think this is a longer discussion about, like, what is our art form doing in terms of on the bigger side of things? Like, are musicals musicals anymore? Are plays anymore? You know, like, it's always a little bit of everything, particularly when you get like a big budget show like this.
Right.
And the consequences contractually on that, as we're going into equity contracts and everything else like that. There's a very big conversation that can happen, maybe off recording, but also many, many other circles too, that should be had. But when you have something like this, I do think that there's traditionalists within our community who look at shows, unbelievable shows. Let us remember Purpose, John Proctor, O Mary, even on the musical side, like Buena Vista Social Club, and you have Real Women Have Curves and Dead Outlaw, you know, like all of these shows are really beautiful expressions of the art form. And they were here for a reason, really beautifully here for a reason. And this does exist alongside of it.
Yeah.
And we have some folks who come to the show and, you know, they're like, well, yeah, the special effects. And I feel so sorry for them, because, oh, you didn't see everything else that was going on. You didn't see all of that other thing, you know, like the true storytelling that was happening in there. And I think what is going to be really lovely in like 5-10 years is when we see that these massive shows can also exist alongside Dead Outlaw. They can exist alongside Purpose, right?
Totally.
And both have a place. Both have a place.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is a real celebration of this season of theater, particularly on Broadway, that both of those things are existing. And I'm so happy to hear that, you know, those who come and are like, oh, I don't really know, I've already seen the show, like, it'll be what it is. And then they leave being like, oh my God, I'm going to come 20 times.
I'm sure.
You know, we've had people come 30 times to this show, you know, that I've met at the stage door. I cannot fathom seeing a show 30 times, but people can't get enough. And I think what it is that they realize that there's always more to see. There's always more to see. And I can only hope that, what's the stat right now? Like 65% of our audience right now has never been to a Broadway show before.
Wow.
I will get emotional in this moment. Somebody at the stage door stops me. It's a little kid. She's maybe like 6, maybe max 8. She's got the Stranger Things best branding ever hat on, you know, the New York upside down hat. And her dad's like, we saw you in Back to the Future out in Lincoln. And she said, we had to come see you in this show. This is her first Broadway show. And that in of itself is a really beautiful moment. And I looked down to her, I'm like, well, what did you think? And she just kept looking at me again and again. She said, I cannot wait to come back. I cannot wait to come back. The consequences of that are immense. And it's not whether or not she sees Stranger Things again. Tickets will be sold. Sonya Friedman will continue to produce. You know, like, it's not beholden to this child coming to see the show again. But what it is about seeing theater here. It's about seeing theater off Broadway. It's about seeing regional. It's about seeing shows in Lincoln. This show, for whatever reason, was the thing that allowed her to be able to continue being a patron of the arts, somebody in the arts, whatever it is. And that, to me, is something that, outside of a really dope trailer, outside of a really dope trailer, is actually the most important thing, is that the show is really bringing the next generation of theater makers, but also the next generation of theater goers to this community.
Yeah.
And to me, that is a really positive thing. I really have a hard time seeing that as anything but that.
I'm such an empathetic crier. Like, seeing you get kind of emotional there, I was like, oh my God, I'm not gonna make it.
Well, also, Dylan and I were that little girl, and our parents would bring us from Cleveland to New York to see, you know, whoever we were obsessed with on a national tour. Or thankfully, we grew up in the YouTube era and stuff, so we could, you know, connect in that way too. But it really is special. I want to talk to you also about Back to the Future. But before we jump into that, I'm realizing we're like running out of time here. We didn't get to ask you about your Ring of Keys moment, that moment that you were participating in something or taking in art in some way that made you realize that you wanted to make it a bigger part of your life. Do you feel like you can pinpoint a moment or two?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that, like anything in life, and life in the arts is filled with these moments that sort of like encourage you to push along. I think the first Broadway show that I ever saw was Phantom of the Opera, but the second one that I saw was Billy Elliot.
Ooh.
And I was right around that age that that I think I was right around that age that Billy was. The irony of it is the two directors, Stephen Daldry and Justin Martin, were, I mean, talk about full circle here, is really surreal. My understudy on Back to the Future was one of the Billies on the tour. You know, like, it's just like a very weird moment of this sort of full circle, but like literally, you know, it's the classic tale of seeing yourself. Mm-hmm. These kids doing what I was not even fully conscious of what I was hoping to do. That's a really big moment.
Electricity. Oh,
dude. I mean, and I was on the back row. We scalped those tickets on the street. You know, like, my mom was like, we are going to see this show. We bought tickets the night before and they ended up being fake. We bought round tickets the day too, because we were like, we must see this show. And I'm back row, resting my head on the back of the theater. And, you know, just like, I walked out of that being like, no, not only can I do this, I will do this. There's just no other option. Like, I unfortunately, from that point on, I never was really going to be good at working in an office. They kind of ruined me in that regard. But I think the other big moment, you know, like, I've heard you all talk about like your Friday night when you're having a drink and you're just like, let's just watch music videos. You know what I'm saying? Like, that moment for me, and I almost say embarrassing myself, but it's just, I did it literally 2 weeks ago with my other friends who aren't theater people. I showed them all the first Tonys. I was so late to the game because I was a sports kid. You know, I played soccer. I was a swimmer. You know, my dad was just such in that. And his idea of ensemble was team, right? And going out and seeking an objective through scoring points with balls, you know? And I'm so grateful to that because it really set me up for success in terms of how do you have leadership and team management and collaboration and all that. But my first Tonys that I ever saw was 2016.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So
2016, I'm trying to remember.
Hamilton.
We're talking Hamilton. We're talking Color Purple. We're talking Waitress. We're talking.
Got a little Bright Star in there.
She Loves Me.
A little Bright Star moment in there. She Loves Me. We're talking about an incredible season of shows in which, like, if Hamilton wasn't there, it would have been really competitive in so many ways. I mean, the Cynthia and Revo performance for Color Purple alone, the Waitress performance, you know, like, I remember watching that, and it was the first time I had consciously watched our community go win best actor in a feature role for a play, Reed Burney, The Humans, who actually helped me get a job as a personal assistant to Ralph Fiennes on The Menu.
Literally what?
Because I worked with his wife in The Rose Tattoo. Talk about these connections of like the thing, if they're filming in Savannah, they needed a recommendation. He happened to be in the film, like knew me from that. Like just these beautiful things, but like, there was so many. I remember watching Reed's acceptance speech and him talking about, like, you know, 40, however many years to be an overnight success in this thing. And it was just so affirming to me that, you know, there's a lot of business stuff that happens. And I've found out business stuff from just now working within the industry for a little bit long and like what the reality of sometimes the Tonys is. And yet, even still, why we watch again and again. And why I go back to watching that is it because it's actual artists expressing what they had, everything they had in that moment. And that is real always. That is real always. So that moment for sure is really, really big for me.
So good.
That's incredible. Did your friends enjoy watching the ceremony?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah,
good.
No, they did. I mean, they were just like, so I think they were enthralled by my enthusiasm of it all. But like when you show them three different performances that are great, and then you show them like, here's in the ways in which they are great. It was really beautiful to have two people who are not within the theater community be like, oh no, I see why Audra McDonald's performance at the Tonys was so revelatory.
Yeah.
And why that almost should be preserved and sent off into space for some, you know, like, you know, like,
talk about a time capsule. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like the way she ripped that jacket off the ground as they went into the B-roll of her coming off stage and then so promptly cut away. I need that footage now and I need it preserved on every hard drive possible because it was such a testament to what we're actually doing here. It is such a testament to what we are actually doing here, giving our absolute all every single night. And maybe that's not the way for everybody, and that's okay. But to witness that actually playing out and for people at home, I just, it makes me like slightly sweaty. It's just like everybody at our watch party for, you know, we're watching for Stranger Things. Like it was a moment of silence. We watched that and nobody spoke until after it cut. And for probably about 30 seconds to a minute after that, people were rapt by that moment because it is an artist saying, you want me to tell a story out of context right now? I refuse to do it any other way than the way it must be done.
Right.
Not only that, but going from full glam into the character that she already done a matinee of earlier that day, like beyond. Also the memes that people were doing of her throwing the jacket off. They were like me walking into the office on Monday morning, like funny stuff like that. So good. Wait, I cannot blow past you being Ralph Fiennes' personal assistant on the menu.
Oh, yeah.
Can you just give me some like buzzwords from that experience?
Oh, man. I mean, I only called him chef.
Is he method?
I think there's a that character is pretty intense, and I think he was.
Yeah.
It's a hard role to jump in and out of, and so I think this sort of like own that space in a very Voldemort-esque way, but also be able to be cool and calculated. I think he needed to sort of live in it a little bit longer, maybe than some of the actors were needing to. But what was really wild about that experience is like coming from the play, you know, like the play side of things, and what I love most about any art form of is the collaboration. That entire ensemble was on set almost every single day. And so it was really, really cool to watch actors across the moments in their career, how long they've been doing it, styles of doing it all together.
Yeah.
On the soundstage for you know, like a couple months. And I think actually the wildest moment from that would be, you know, anytime he was off set, I was with him. And I remember him asking me, hey, you know, Burke, I need to work on something. Can you go get the book that is on my dressing room table? And so I like go to his trailer and I pick up the book, and it's The Odyssey. And he takes it. Nick Holt had the one thing he asked for in the celebrity status of it all was a basketball court for people to play together on. Like, come on, Nick Holt. Jeez Louise. Can you stop being so nice? My gosh. A beautiful human. But, you know, like Rafe took the stage and everybody was on set. And it was just me watching him begin taking on the role of Odysseus by finding the gesture. And that moment will live with me for the rest of my life. He never knew that I was an actor. I never told him I didn't want to be another PA that was sort of, you know, an actor trying to learn things from him. I tried to just be very respectful of his process, but witnessing that, one of the greats.
That is incredible.
You know, stepping into a process. I mean, thank you, Reed Burney, for helping me get that job. Thanks for, you know, everybody who let me in there. It was just wild, wild.
I love this like hidden memory from your career here. That's like, was Anya Taylor-Joy, had Queen's Gambit come out yet at that point? Or was she like,
It had. Yeah. Okay. I mean, it was like a very wild moment for her too, you know, because it was this moment where it really felt like that movie may be the thing, you know, that suddenly like sort of continued to catapult. And, you know, obviously she's made a great name for herself, and she does great performances all over the place, but you're really looking at people from across all over the place in that, you know, that were really...
Oh, yeah. Judith Light.
Like, come on. And I mean, just watching the relationship of these people be there for each other in different ways and sort of support and advocate and how they handled themselves on set. It was a really, really beautiful experience. I'm really grateful for that time. It gave me a real perspective of what it would be like to do something like that. And I look forward to having a chance to play it out on the acting side of things, but an incredibly educational... Honestly, the person that I was always most impressed by was Amy Carrero. Who, you know, for a D&D loving, TTRPG loving person, you know, from Critical Role and She-Ra voiceover actress, just like having her walk around getting her steps, you know, like during the lunch breaks, and just such like a genuinely kind, effusively lovable human being on screen and off screen, like seeing that that is possible and that, in my opinion, is the way to be it. Just really lovely lessons constantly, any opportunity we get. So.
That's so nice. Wait, Burke, can we have 10 more minutes of your time?
Babe, I'm here. I'm hanging out with my two friends, Connor and Dylan. I'm so sorry to all of you who are listening to our private conversations. Yeah, we're having a great time. Please.
I'm really curious about, so you mentioned between Rose Tattoo and going on the road with Back to the Future, how you kept yourself motivated and engaged throughout those years. I mean, obviously we had the pandemic, which put all of us on pause in ways at a time, but were you in New York that whole time in between those two stage credits?
Yeah, I was actually on set with a very small recurring role on Harlem, a really lovely Amazon Prime show. And I was actually on set when Broadway shut down and, you know, didn't really know what the hell was happening. And sort of like, you know, everybody's starting like starting to drink hand sanitizer and they have no idea what's happening. We, you know, that's not real. That's the
no, I know, but it was like that.
You know, it was that moment where you thought if you stepped outside, you were going to die. Right. So,
yeah.
We were there. Me and one of my roommates had just gone to meet his, you know, his girlfriend's parents for the first time. And then he was like, I'm thinking I'm coming back. And we're like, do not come back. Do not come back. And so it was me and my roommate, you know, sort of in there for the first couple months, that front half of the summer. And then I sort of hit out, my parents had moved to Arizona. So my sister picked me up from school and everything else. But to answer your actual question is like, whether I was in Arizona or whether I came back transitioning into the self-tape world, transitioning into that moment where you're like, the savings that I've had is starting to dwindle and I need to find other ways of working and finding a day job and making that happen. I was living in South Brooklyn at the time and away from the industry, it really felt like in many, many ways. And how do I keep this going? And in some ways, I really have to give shout out to the Savannah College of Art and Design, SCAD, because I had really lovely teachers there in my BFA Performing Arts program, teachers who have taught me so much, who gifted me so many opportunities to explore and figure it out there. And also, I think my most important class there was not any of my performing arts classes. It was my design classes that I had to take as part of the, you know, sort of liberal arts section of SCAD, where I had to take design one and color theory and time and you know, all of these different things. And my professor, Professor Christopher Olszewski, an artist in his own right, was a real advocate for people who weren't traditional artists in terms of painting or physically manifesting the things that they saw in their mind. But what he was an advocate for was process. And I left SCAD realizing that I didn't identify, this is going to get really pretentious here, rock with me. I don't necessarily identify as an actor. Acting is almost my day job that sometimes it doesn't pay. Performing as a performing artist, that's where I live. It means that the job itself may be whatever it is, but the way I go about developing Hopper as a character and the way that I go about performing Hopper, that's where my artistic process comes out. And what it means to me is that it meant that during the pandemic, like JMP Collective, that stems out of my creative partner, Quentin Staley, who is a graphic designer by trade. You know, he's an unbelievable writer in his own right, but I had sort of vomited out these like 1 to 4 a.m. songs that probably are more experimental poetry, you know, whatever. And it was this idea of, you know, like, let's have a creative process together from afar, and essentially didn't want to make another bad SoundCloud. And so made a visual experience through graphic design and experimental art, collage and that sort of thing. Those moments really carried me through that 5-year gap while also auditioning and doing everything else. You know, I produced a performance, a movement concert of sorts of our second book that we're currently trying to self-publish right now, Postcards I Never Sent, completely crowdfunded it. We went down to the Gibney downtown and like put on 3 performances, zoomed them out to people. And, you know, it was an improv piece between 2 movers, 2 musicians and a photographer, all sort of semi-improving these lyrics to get photos for the album to design based off of. And those sorts of moments have been really freeing, because what it meant was that when I went into these auditions, I wasn't going and saying, this will give me purpose in my life. Mm-hmm. What it meant is that when I got to try my hand at George McFly, it just meant, oh, well, what frequency am I going to exist in this space? And let me go try my hand. Let me go have some fun. They're asking me to come in person. Thank goodness. It's so lovely to be back in that way. You know, let me go have some fun with it, because I know that I'm going to go and wonder about, you know, do these contour lines work with this image and this color afterwards? You know, and that moment of like having a full life outside of theater, outside of film, outside of whatever your manifestation is, and realizing that this is one aspect of it, is something that I think has saved me in many ways. And it sounds like for many, a lot of people, yeah. I mean, obviously this for you too, right? Like during the pandemic, you were talking about, right? Like it allowed you the space to stay connected, not only together, but also, you know, with the community that you love so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anything that allows us to do that is really, really powerful.
That's awesome. How do you feel like you're able to balance personal life now while doing the 8 show a week schedule with this behemoth production that I'm sure it is taking up so much of your attention outside of the show schedule?
Yeah, I'm imagining like my friends who I haven't responded to their texts in a minute, sort of popping up on the shoulder and being like, not well, you know, like it felt like when I was on the tour, it felt like summer camp for, you know, the 6 months that I was doing it. And you're thrown in with this unbelievable group of young performers who are having fun, not only traveling, but doing the show that's really just joyful and playful. And then I come into this show and it's like the same thing. It's like we have like 10-year-olds in this cast. We have people who could have grandkids in this cast. You know, it's a full spectrum of people. And we actually enjoy each other's company. I mean, like we really enjoy being with each other. We have plans to go to somebody's like parent who has a lake house, you know, like in Westchester on one of our days off. We want to spend time with each other after this, right? And when that happens and you are in that moment, it's really hard to not view it as like, this is my time with them. There will come a time where I'm not in the show with these people and I won't get to hang out with Allison Jay every single day. I won't get to hang out with Patrick Scott McDermott and Juan Carlos and all these unbelievable people, right? You know, like, and I want to take advantage of that time now, and I have to trust and hope that, you know, my love for my friends outside of that will know that that's like a long-standing thing there. Yeah. You know, you can only put so many feelers out for people. And if they aren't reciprocating that, you know, it's understandable that maybe this just isn't the era of that friendship. But I think there's a really powerful moment of like, of really trying to take advantage of your days. You know, we have the luxury of like not having shows on Wednesday matinee. It means that we do 5 shows over the weekend, but it means that I was able to go see Purpose. I was able to go see Sunset Boulevard finally. I was able to go see, you know, these shows during that time block and go and see people that I've worked with before or not worked with. And you really get to celebrate that. I think all of that stuff makes it that when we go into the show that night, you go, ah, yeah. It just, particularly Purpose. I mean, I just saw the, I just am just blown away by every single one of those performers.
Yeah.
And that writing, just such good writing. I mean, just, I mean, talking about asexuality through the lens of nature. I mean, my mom saw it last night and was like just weeping on the train home because we were just like, how beautiful a thing of whether you connect with one or the other aspect. Now, just constantly enlightening. And I feel that friendship is the same way.
Mm.
Friendship is the same way, you know, going out and seeing this world and being in this wild, wild city, you know, for all the mayhem that it is, like there's just so much expression of life in it. And getting off my ass, getting off my fucking phone, you know,
I
like
know.
Leaving this apartment that I have to spend a lot of money to have, you know, like it's important to continue being out to those people. So maybe this is a message to my friends who, you know, I'm like, hey, let's meet up. Like, let's really meet up. Let's make it happen because life is happening right now. You know what I'm saying? And I want to be present with the people that I have here and now. And sometimes that means that maybe balance won't happen all of the time, but ever grateful for the inspiration, ever grateful for the community that continues to be there.
Eloquently said.
And I totally understand that. I know you're very well spoken. I always have to remind myself, it'll rebalance in a few, you know, if you are up later one night and you miss the gym the next morning, like your routine will kick back in, you know, just
yes.
For an example of something I stress about on a weekly basis, you know, sure. But it's all going to be all right.
I mean, I don't know what you all did after you saw Sunset Boulevard for the first time, but I mean, I like walked out of that. I had gone with my mom, Allison Jay, and her mom, and we walked out of it and they're like, yeah, we need some food. And I was like, I have to go to work now. And like, in 30 minutes we have press. And I got to do a show after that. And I got to the point and I hadn't really done a full vocal warm-up, which is really big for me, a no-no, and a real big no-no for the show because it really is vocally taxing and physically taxing. And it was that moment where you just had to be like, I got to trust my body. I got to trust that the spirit of Hopper is here and that, you know, like some days it's just going to be like this. And at the end of the day, like I can ask for support from my ensemble. You don't have to be the hero.
Yeah.
You know, you got to just sometimes say like, this is where I am at right now and trust that it's there and trust that the relationship with the audience will be there as well. You have nothing to prove. I am already enough.
Yes.
You know, all these really lovely little spiritual mantras for yourself to keep going.
Totally.
I love
that
those.
Resonates
I love those.
For sure.
Oh my God. I hurt my back a few months ago. So I've been seeing an acupuncturist/Eastern medicine healer.
We love.
I don't know if I'm keeping this on the episode, but I basically was like last resort vibes. Like I did all the other things I could be doing. Sure. My back still just wasn't right. But it's been honestly helping me a lot. But as an Eastern medicine doctor, he's like, sometimes it's mind over matter. He's like, just put post-its up on your bathroom mirror that say like, I am healthy. I am well. I'm going to be great. And I'm like, oh, wait, maybe he's right.
I would take you over. If I wasn't hooked up to a microphone, I would take you over to my door. I called my friend, who is her birthday today, Katie Biaglads. I love you so much. Called my friend and I was talking about some stresses of just like, you know, drama backstage that was beginning to happen and like me kind of getting wrapped up in it and being disappointed in myself. And she said, what is now on my dressing room table and on the handle of my door, it's just a silly goose job. Sometimes I know it's Broadway and how beautiful and how awesome that is. And also it's just a silly goose job. What a weird thing to go into work and say, I'm playing Hopper from Stranger Things, who's fighting off Demogorgons and Mind Flayers and a kid who has telekinesis power. That's a weird thing to go play pretend in. You know, it's a weird thing, but at the end of the day, it's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. I'm living the dream right now. You know, and I was living the dream during those 5 years in which I wasn't working either.
Yeah.
Like what, how great it is to go in there and just have some fun. Because when we have fun on stage, people in the audience are going to be experiencing that as well. And it really is a mutual relationship that is happening. We don't exist without the other. So I commend you for finding another path forward, Connor, because sometimes it maybe it's not what you expected, or maybe it's not what you want to like publicly say is like, this is the way that I'm finding it. But like sometimes just sitting in silence and breathing is okay. It's okay.
That's also what he wants me to do. But
yeah, I will tell you, I'm forgetting the name of the individual from the Jonathan Larson project who only is on Instagram.
Oh, Andy.
Andy. I've taken that. Truly. I'm now trying to only do it 2 times a week. That has been unbelievably helpful for my mind. And honestly, this past Monday, like this is not, I don't want to proselytize here, but I will say that it's something that I took the whole day, no tech, much to my mother's dismay of not giving her weekly call. But I just like went and took no tech, walked around. I'm living uptown and like just, you know, like actually go look at the neighborhood that I'm in and explore in the heat. And I came back and I woke up and I have not rested that deeply in a very long time.
Wow.
And sometimes in an industry that wants us to think that everything is happening right now and that it must happen right now, you know, I have to listen to that next episode. I have to go see that next thing. Like sometimes, you know, just sitting down and actually enjoying the glass of wine that you have, or actually just like sitting in front of one art piece at the Massive Met. Sometimes that is enough and it's going to be okay. And you might feel more yourself afterwards anyway.
Yeah,
absolutely. Because
we are kind of rushing most of the other time.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, as I take my first full breath.
I know. I was like, I felt that.
Felt good,
though.
Felt good. I felt it. Oh my God. Burke, you're so well spoken and I'm obsessed with our conversation. We have to do this again or in real life. I don't know.
Yeah,
we'll figure it
all
out.
All of the above, please. Yeah.
All of the above. But we're at the end of this episode of Drama. And thank you so much again for being such a supporter of us. It really means a lot to us.
Yeah.
We do end with a dose of drama. This is that little piece of pop culture or things that is occupying our mind that we just have to share with the listeners. We're all going to share out. Dylan, do you have a dose of drama you want to start with today?
Okay, it's more so I just need to extend this moment with Burke here. But when you played George McFly, unfortunately didn't get to see you, but I think my parents did in Cleveland if you did the Cleveland stop. Did you do the voice?
Oh, yes. And you know what? I when we were on the road, I would always say like, you know, I do that 8 times a week and come check it out. But George really lives with me. I don't really know what I feel like in many ways. I just sort of figured out George energetically and it felt like a lot of things could just happen. And part of that is the voice.
Yeah, no, you know, you just kind of set into it and you really just enjoy yourself there. And Cleveland was such a great stop too, because, you know, sometimes what it did in the State Theater was it really just like brought it into a place where it was actually quite natural. And I think in Cleveland, I learned that George is not only physical comedy in a bit, but actually one of the most sincere characters we have in a massive IP, because he really is just trying to find love and is really fumbling his way through, trying to, you know, figure it out.
Burke,
yeah,
I have full body chills. And
me
also
too.
The fact that you recalled that it was the State Theater.
Yes.
It was crazy.
I mean,
that's
the
so
second largest theater district in the country. People don't know this. My goodness.
They don't
know this. But Cleveland was a great stop. We got really lucky with that one. So cheers.
That's
to your
so nice to hear.
There.
That voice was amazing. I love how your eyes were kind of closed for part of it too. I know people couldn't see it because, you know, we're on an audio format, but that was amazing.
I love
it's
that.
It's just
so much.
Like, there's like a little twist. I miss that character so much. And I really miss the people, you know. I got to do that show with Caden Brausch and Zan Berube, and, you know, like just getting to do a lot of those scenes with them. Ethan Rogers as Biff, like it just, everybody was so committed to the heart of the story within something that was so silly.
Yeah.
It's something I miss very dearly. It was very hard to leave, even though Stranger Things is so great. It's really
totally.
The people it comes down to. So,
oh, I love it. Thank you for indulging me on that.
Of course.
That was my
so
dose
good.
Of drama. I just needed to know about the voice. Connor, do you have a dose?
I do. Okay. So I saw the new Superman movie and you guys, it's really good.
Oh.
And David Corenswet, who is playing Superman, y'all, I'm in love. I'm in trouble. I'm so obsessed. I'm considering going to see it a second time just to stare at him on a giant screen. I know that sounds insane, but there are so few pleasures we have left in life. And I wonder if this is just one of the simplest ones I can indulge myself in. So I do recommend you guys go see it. It's really good.
That is a full man. That is a full man.
Yeah.
And my mom and I really loved Henry as Superman.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd seen this on YouTube. There was like an interview, like more of long form interview with him. And it was, we both looked at each other and we were like, damn. And he's a really nice guy. And he's
oh,
a really
yeah.
nice guy. He's
yeah.
just like a husband. And like, you know, like he's just so sweet. Yeah. I can't wait to see it.
You've got to see it. I think you'll like it.
Yeah. They were actually filming in Cleveland when we were there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it
Oh
was
my
so cool to
God.
see downtown Cleveland, this unbelievably, I think, like sort of age of itself, but when, you know, it really has that metropolis feeling to it. And it was really beautiful to see that architecture honored in that movie. So
Yeah.
I'm excited to see it.
Oh, I love that. If you watch the first Avengers movie, they also filmed New York is
Yeah.
Cleveland in that one.
Oh, that's great to
Yeah.
know. That's great to know.
Burke, do you have a dose of drama to close out this episode of drama?
Sure. I mean, in light of like your reference too. I mean, like I just finished reading. I'm a very slow reader, as I am. I'm a terrible media consumer. I really like my time. If you couldn't tell, I like taking my time with things and actually just kind of. I can't watch shows in the background. I kind of have to just be in it. I love movies. Going to the movie theater is like a church to me. I keep A-list or whatever the hell it is called. You know.
Yeah.
Just simply as like a donation to that. But I just finished the book Purpose by Toni Morrison. And I don't know that I've read anything as good as that. I mean, I loved, there's so many, A Little Life is a great book as well, a very hard read, but Purpose was like reading poetry and long form. And I know that's like such not a hot take. Like everybody's like, yeah, no shit, Sherlock. It's been around forever. But it took me so long to read it because I could not stop just sitting with it. So that definitely is one. But I do want to say, like, music wise, what's been on repeat is a very dear friend of mine who actually I did that Postcards I Never Sent performance piece with, Ray Marie Johnson. He finally released some of his music on a short EP, four songs, I believe, Contemplations Volume 1. It's on Spotify. You can buy it on Bandcamp, I believe. But Ray has such an unbelievable way of utilizing his voice as an instrument. So the music is always great, already great. The lyrics are already thoughtful and pensive. It lives in sort of that folk guitar space, but there is a, dare I say, like a true holiness that is evoked in the way that they've engineered it. And he I think produced it with his dad in their home studio, and that you can really feel that relationship kind of being played out in the recording of it as well. So it's only four songs. Like, that's why I've been repeating it. I can't stop listening because every aspect of it to me is so intimate. And if you're looking for like a little moody way to wake up, or you know, like drink your coffee or tea or lemon water, whatever the hell you're getting into these days, you know, I would urge you to check it out. Contemplations Volume 1, Ray Marie Johnson.
I'm gonna give it a spin. It
Please
sounds
do.
amazing. It sounds right up my alley too. So that's
I know. I was gonna say Dylan's gonna
very
definitely check
moody,
it out.
very moody. It's like the soft glow of the morning light. My earplugs are in, and I look off into the middle distance at some Ohio tree. You
I
know,
know. Yeah.
whatever works for you, babe.
You got it. Oh my gosh, Burke, you're so fun. You're so kind and intelligent. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your words. We're gonna have to do this again, like Connor said. So in person,
Yeah.
maybe.
I look forward to it. And if you need somebody to go to Superman with, just let me know, Connor. You know my schedule, and we'll figure it out. But cheers to that.
I'll hold you to it. I'll
Yeah.
hold you to it. Where do you want everybody to follow you on Instagram when you log on twice a week?
You, twice a week. Yeah. You can come check out my little 14-second video moments of me trying to pause in my life on social media at Burke, Burke underscore Swanson. That, and we're still in process with that book. But if you want to do at JMP spelled out underscore collective, when Postcards is inevitably released to the world, you can check that out there or find our first book, 12-4, there as well.
Amazing. While everyone is following Burke, they got to follow us throughout the Drama Podcast. Connor's at Connor McDowell. I'm at Dylan McDowell. And Connor, I'll see you next time. Drama.
Drama.